Please help me welcome J. Lauren Norris.
I was actually in the room when a leader turned to John Maxwell and said, you know, I've been in this leadership role in the C-level suite for a while, and man, it sure is lonely at the top. What do you do to surround yourself with people when you're at the top? And John Maxwell stood up from his bar stool and he looked at the crowd and he said, look, if it's lonely at the top, you're not doing it right. That's what I want to talk about in this episode of Leading Leaders. I'm J. Lauren Norris for Leading Leaders Podcast, and I want you to know that there's a whole lot of myths about leadership that start around, well, you got to step on enough bodies to get to the top. You got to build a pile of bodies to get to the top. I recently heard John Maxwell say, actually, in his presentation at 10X GrowthCon for Grant Cardone just a couple of weeks ago, he said, I figured out that part of my challenge when I came early into leadership was I had to figure out how to get out of the pile of people. How do you get out of the pile of people? And here's what he meant by that. You got to learn to stand out. And he kind of gave a little illustration about the beginning of his relationship with John Wooten and how Coach Wooten became a mentor of his because he asked the right questions at the right time. And he came with a lot of questions and he had good questions. He had questions that were worth discussing. But he talks about how asking those questions, it was kind of like getting one hand up and then getting one arm out of the people pile so that he could be noticed enough for somebody to say, hey, there's somebody out of the pile of people worth paying attention to. Now, the pile of people isn't the pile of people that you climb on to get to the top. A lot of people see leadership that way. The pile of people is the throngs of those who live comfortably in mediocrity. They don't really want to push hard to the next level. They don't want to do those things which are uncomfortable. They don't want to be challenged beyond their daily expectations. They want to do what it takes to get a paycheck, keep their head down, and go home. That's the average pile of people. And we're shifting the average, sadly enough. I think our culture, partly because of education, partly because of the sad infiltration of the Marxist ideologies that say that if you've succeeded, you've taken it from somebody else, which is all by itself a cultural and sociological and sociopolitical myth. The idea that one can't succeed without others failing is, well, it's false. You can see it everywhere. But the pile of people is, it's kind of moving down the bell curve as well. Where is the pile now? Well, in LA, they're all homeless. Not that they're not competent. Not that they're not industrious. I mean, watch the people who live on the streets in LA or San Francisco or Dallas or Houston or San Antonio or Philadelphia, and you'll notice something about them. In the those without home community, call them homeless, call them poverty stricken, call them those who choose not to live under the thumb of the man with someone holding a mortgage over their head, there's still cultural expectations. There's still honor among thieves, if you will. Even in the homeless culture, there are certain things that are taboo. Oh, they're industrious. They spend a lot of their time finding ways to generate enough cash to get through the day, find the right soup kitchen, find the right place to get a meal. Yes, some have mental illness and some are completely incapable of taking care of themselves or a family, but many of them have chosen the lifestyle that says, I don't have any obligations. I don't have to pay for rent. I don't have to pay for a mortgage. I don't have to pay for car payments. I don't have to pay for insurance. The streets take care of me. We take care of one another. And while there are some who look at those who choose to live without a home or those who cannot get a home as the dregs of society, those are humans. Those are people. And what has happened in the last couple of decades is we've moved the people pile from the highest of its bell curve, the average mid-level manager, the working force, blue-collar worker. The people pile is moving down the scale. We have young people today on one hand who say, I can't believe I got a $200,000 college degree and can't make $100,000. And so they bemoan that fact while they're working at a coffee shop or a pizza joint. And they're still wondering what they're going to do with that degree. On the other hand, you've got, watching one just the other day, young lady built an account of showing herself doing spectacularly obnoxious things and recently bought a horse ranch with the money she raised exposing herself. A horse ranch. $2 million. And she's doing pretty well. Who cares what she went to college for? She found a way to make the money. Exposing herself. She found a way to get out of the people pile. She's not even 30 years old yet, but she owns her own horse ranch. How many of you can say that? When it comes to leaders and connections, you've got to get out of the people pile to be able to rise up to do something different. You've got to learn how to stand out. You've got to learn how not to be just like everybody else, but you cannot. If you want to be in leadership, now you can be a superstar like that. I can't imagine, although she makes a whole lot of money with people watching her do things, I can't imagine her level of influence being considered significant leadership. I will say she inspires, motivates, leads, influences people to behave in certain ways, but I wouldn't consider that the kind of leadership that I want to mimic. But if you want to be the kind of leader that has the kind of leadership that people want to mimic, you're going to have to do something a little different. You're going to have to learn how to get out of the people pile. You're going to have to learn to stand out. You're going to have to distinguish yourself, but not at the expense of others. Getting out of the people pile and standing out and doing something unique does not mean climbing on top of the people pile and using it to get to the top, because if you're a leader who's lonely at the top, it means you didn't do it right. It means you got there all on your own, probably at the expense of those that you've led. That's not the kind of leadership you want. You don't want to get to the top and look back and realize you're alone and you're just taking a walk. You want to get to the top and look around and realize not only have you risen to the top, not only have you found your way out of the people pile, but you've actually done something worth mimicking, something worth modeling. Other people have said, I want to do what you're doing. You learn to multiply yourself. Leading Leaders Podcast is not about generating a lot of followers. Just look at my followers. I don't have a lot of followers. That's not my campaign. People say, well, you could change your thumbnails and have tens of thousands of views. Fine, change them. I don't care. That's not what I'm here for. What I'm here for is to build a deeper relationship with leaders. I want to get to the top and realize that when I look left and right, there are a whole lot of people who said, we're doing the same thing. We're leading leaders. John Maxwell inspired that in me over a decade ago. And he said, if I get to the end of my course and I realize that I have 50 million followers, I'll consider that a fail. If I get to the end of my course instead, though, and I've diligently led 1,000 leaders who each lead 1,000 leaders, who each lead 1,000 leaders, I win. That's the kind of win that I want. So now you might be asking yourself, what does it have to do with human connection? And what are you going to teach me today that's worthwhile for me knowing? Okay, number one, follow John Maxwell's advice and get out of the people pile. Figure out what it means to stand out. Don't go along with the flow just to go along with the flow. Don't find yourself in a homeless situation just because that's what the crowd is doing. Or find yourself in the middle of mediocrity because that's what the crowd is doing. Or find yourself accepting social mores, which are culturally destructive, just because that's what the crowd is doing, because it's what's popular today. No, get out of the people pile. Discover your talents, discover your strengths, set yourself apart, focus on, intently focused on what makes you different. I did not say what makes you better. I said what makes you different. What makes you unique? What are your skills, gifts, talents, abilities that nobody else has? They were given to you for a reason. Use them. Use them. The world needs them. The world needs you to be the best you can be. Another chastisement I got from John Maxwell. When you understand what you're called to, the who that you are, getting out of the people pile is not hard. Now I'm going to tell you some of the hard part, though, because humans are tricky. There are a lot of people in management, a lot of people in leadership at various levels who feel like the only success, stepping on people, climbing over the top of the people pile, using people to get to the top, means managing every relationship, means manipulating every relationship. I'll give you only exactly what I need you to have so that you'll give me twice as much back. Every relationship is an ROI. Every relationship is looking for, well, when do I get my opportunity from this relationship? If you think I'm kidding, just go to any old average weekday morning network meeting in your local community. And what you're going to find, unless there's a structure of networking within the organization, what you're going to find is everybody's here going, here's what I need, here's what I need, here's what I need. I need you to buy for me, I need you to buy for me, I need you to buy for me. Well, if you're in sales and you run a business, then that's what you need, is people to buy from you. That's how you stay in business, whatever your business is, whatever you sell, whether it's books, tapes, coaching time, widgets, plumbing services, air conditioning services, auto mechanics, tires, bathroom rugs. I don't care what you sell. If you don't sell any of them, you don't make any money. If you don't make any money, you don't stay in business. If you don't stay in business, then you fall right back into the people pile. So I get it that going to network meetings, going to opportunities like, a trade show, an expo, these are about creating sales transactions. Unless, like my friend Amy Varley says, you learn to network like a pro. When you learn to network like a pro, what you realize is that you may not get the transaction from the person you're talking to. If you change your mindset about that one thing, if you realize that I'm standing face to face with George, and George doesn't buy what I sell, doesn't have a need for one, George doesn't wear mascara. So how long do I bother talking to George if I know George is not my ideal client? The answer to that question rests in the heart of the leader. And if you have a good heart, then you realize the time you're spending with George isn't invested in selling mascara. It's invested in building human connections. And the more you build those connections, the stronger your opportunity to sell will grow. Now, that sounds like a backward way of methodology, and it is, because it's not the norm. But if you'll spend your time being the kind of person that people want to build a relationship with, you're going to find that you have a whole lot more relationships that have a whole lot more relationships that have a whole lot more relationships. And this one-to-one transactional opportunity will exponentially grow with significantly less effort. See, if you go out there and turn every individual relationship, every face that you see, every person you meet, every conversation you have, if every one of them is either a prospect or moving on, then you lose at least the six people they're connected to. Because once you've burned that bridge, they're not interested in passing you on to anybody else. But if you instead approach connection as a way of saying, how can I help you? What can I do for you? Now, this takes intentionality. It takes compassion. It takes realizing that at least for this moment, while I'm building this relationship, while I'm getting to know you, while I'm empathetically listening to what's going on in your life, I'm building a relationship that will allow me to serve you by bringing help and hope into your life. Well, that doesn't sound like a sales transaction. It's not a sales transaction. It's a human relationship. If you want sales transactions, go to Amazon. You want sales transactions, build purely online. Nobody ever has to see your face. Just move product, move product, move product. Find the one that's easiest to sell, that has the highest profit margin. In fact, there are tutorials on it. You can download courses for a couple $100 that will teach you how to transact thousands of times a day with a couple of pennies of profit. If that's your gig, if retail trade is your gig and all you want to do is transact, 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 then this is probably not the podcast for you. There are other things that will meet your need. But if you want to lead people in a way that you become a leader of leaders, take the time to be intentional, to be compassionate, to purposefully listen, to the needs of the people around you, even strangers. As you do that, you find a way to serve them, to do for them what they need done, what they want done, to help them where they have pain or a problem or a challenge. Here's what happens. All of a sudden, you've built a relationship that doesn't look like a transaction. It looks like a relationship. Relationships are two-way. Now, granted, I'm going to tell you, I've got a great little book over there by Ivan Meisner, the founder of BNI, one of the largest networking companies in the world, has made him a multi-billionaire. I've been in his home. I'm jealous of his library. His library is bigger than my entire office suite. His office is in the midst of his library because it's that big. It also overlooks a private lake in his backyard. It's absolutely gorgeous. Got to spend a couple of hours with Ivan Meisner. He told me some incredible stories about networking and how to get out of the people pile, but how also to understand that even in the people pile are people who will push you to the top when you build proper relationships. I don't remember exactly which podcast that's in, but I told the whole story. He also gave me a book that he had recently written called Who's in Your Room? And he talks very specifically about building those individual relationships. It's kind of like Amy's networking like a pro. It's how do you build relationships with people, understanding that they have needs and you have needs, and they may not be the transaction you're looking for, but the person they're going to introduce you to could change your life. It's having those quality relationships where people know, like, and trust you, because I don't know about you, but I don't like introducing people that I don't trust to my friends. I don't want people that I can't trust to meet my friends. I don't want my friends to think I brought somebody they can't trust into their life. Why? Because your life is going to become like the five books you've read and the five people you hang out with. If you want to be a multimillionaire, hang out with multimillionaires. Just recently, I talked about Jack Canfield and Martin Victor Hansen meeting with Tony Robbins. They said, we can't seem to get past the $100 million mark. He said, that's because you're hanging out with millionaires. Hang out with some billionaires. You'll learn some new things. Well, how do you get access to a millionaire? Ooh, there's a question. How do you get access to build a relationship with a billionaire? Let me tell you how I ended up in Ivan Meisner's house. Service. A stranger, a guy I'd only met a couple of times, told me that he was going to Austin to do some photography. Dr. Smiley. He said, I'm working on this book and I'm going to take some pictures, and this particular private person has invited me to come and take some pictures. And if you want to go to Austin with me to this network meeting, then I can take you to the network meeting, but then I've got to catch an Uber and go to this person's house. And I'm like, so how are you going to get to Austin? He said, well, I'm going to fly from Dallas to Austin. I said, you realize it'll take you longer to get through airport security than it would to drive to Austin. He's like, what? So it'll take you an hour to get through airport security, get onto a plane, to fly for 45 minutes, then 45 minutes or so to get out of the airport, to get in an Uber, and then to drive. And where you're talking about isn't close to the airport. That's another 45 to an hour in traffic. Altogether, your journey is going to take you 5.5 hours. He's like, oh, well, I thought it'd just be down there by noon because it's in Texas. I said, you misunderstand Texas. But if you'll pay for the gas, connect me with your friends at the network meeting. I will drive you to your meeting and then drop you off at the airport. You can catch your flight back to the East Coast. He said, why would you do that? I said, why wouldn't I do that? I mean, we've had great conversations. I got nothing else to do on that day. I can make a round trip to Austin, stop and see my mom on the way back. Good 6 hours spent. He said, that would be incredible. So we got to spend 3.5 hours in the car together, going to a network meeting, meeting new friends, going to take him to this interview to get these photos. And then Ivan's late wife said, why would you sit in the car for this meeting? Why don't you come inside and you and I can chat while they do? And then I was invited into the meeting. And then I got to have a one-on-one time while photos were taken of Ivan's wife. I got to have one-on-one time with Ivan. Service. This is the part you should be writing down. If you're not writing this down, you're going to miss this. Service. Doing for others what they need done, not what you want to do, not what makes you look good, not what makes you famous. Service, doing for others what they need done leads to access. Access. Now, access means that you get to have connection and sometimes relationship with other people. If you want to be in the room with billionaires, you have to have access. Oh, you can buy your way. You could buy your way to Richard Branson's island. I think it's only like $50,000 for the day to go see Richard Branson on Nectar Island and spend the day with him and have lunch. If you got 50K laying around, bounce on down. Now, I'll tell you, there's some qualifiers to being in the room. And sometimes buying your way into the room isn't all it takes. You've got to have the right relationships and the right credentials and the right credibility. And somebody's got to know who you are for you to even get the invitation, money or no. You've got to be in the right circles with the right people for that to pay off. So, service. Doing for others what they need done, not what you want done. That leads to access. Access leads to relationship. Now, it's easy for a lot of people to assume, well, if I serve you here, then I get opportunity there, and that's transactional. It's skipped the access and relationship part. You can't do that if you want to make genuine connections. Service leads to access. Now that you have access, you have the affordability to build a relationship. You can actually have enough of a conversation to say, I want to get to know you. I want you to get to know me. Let's spend time together. Let's do things together. Let's see where our common values are. Let's see where our common ideas are. Let's see how I can help you make your life better and you can help me make my life better. Maybe that's advice. Maybe that's acts of service. Maybe it's an investment. You never know. But that's what relationship looks like. It's not a quid pro quo, but it is a give and take. And from relationship comes opportunity. And sometimes service leads to access, which leads to relationship, which leads to another relationship where you get to serve all over again. Well, one of the things my wife and I have committed to, it's been about 2 decades since we learned this lesson of serving. There are a lot of times that we do events for people where we pay out of pocket to be a part of it. We've paid out of pocket to rent a camera to do the work that needs to be done in an event that we're not getting paid for. And sometimes they'll cover our basic expenses like hotel and things like that. But I've been to events where I've taken 10,000 photographs over the course of a weekend and got paid zero. I've been to events where I have mentored and coached and helped with the sound systems and helped with the lights and put up the video screens and run the cameras and run the book table and manage the merchandise. I got paid zero. But that service has led to great relationships, and that relationship has led to other relationships. I recently told on this podcast about going to Nashville and spending time with a couple who invited me into their home at no expense, treated us, served us like it was an NRB, or like it was a bed and breakfast for 4 days, treated us like royalty at no expense. These are people who've published 350 songs, 100 plus albums, traveled the world, literally, producing and creating music for decades. They've been producing music since I was born. You don't get an opportunity to have a relationship with people like that by accident. No, it was because the guy that I rode to NRB with, the guy that I drove in his car to Nashville with, is a friend of a friend that my wife and I have served faithfully for almost 15 years. Why? Because service leads to access. Access leads to relationship. Relationship leads to opportunity. And even those opportunities, they may or may not look like transactions. They may not look like a closed sale, a new deal, or a new customer, but an opportunity to be in the room with people who can speak into your life and save you tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars, dozens of years of heartache and pain, broken relationships. People who can speak into your life because they trust you to take action on what they tell you. Opportunity with people like that, you can buy your way to Nectar Island. You could buy your way into some of the most expensive coaching programs in the world and build relationship with highfalutin people, or you can serve. And when you serve, you'll have access. And when you have access, you'll build relationships. And when you build relationships, opportunities follow. And sometimes those opportunities come disguised as, well, more service. but they lead to more access, more relationships, and more opportunities. If you want to be a leader who connects well, stop thinking of everybody that you encounter as a transaction, as part of the people pile that you've got to step on to get to the top. If you want to be a leader who leads leaders, serve. Because service leads to access, that leads to relationship, and that leads to opportunity. If you want to be a leader who leads leaders, serve. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast for Tell It Like It Is TV. Have a blessed day.
Lauren is a master teacher on storytelling, and I learned so much. I'm really going to have to sit down and go back through everything, and I think I might have to have some more coffees with Lauren, but it was totally worth my time, and I really highly recommend it if you're looking to grow your ministry, grow your business, grow your career. Lauren will serve you well.
Thank you.
Subscribe now for our extensive video library of leadership lessons promoting faith, family, and freedom.